Elizabeth Barrett is a wife, mother, licensed marriage and family therapist, educator, eavesdropper, and emotion worker. She uses all of these skills to address the subjects we all struggle with in this conversation with the reluctant therapist. Why do we have trouble saying the word Elizabeth?
I don't know. Are you having a little Freudian block on me today?
You never know.
Every time we have to do this together, I think you get a little anxious. Mm-hmm. You're thinking, I hope she doesn't talk to me. So there, I think it's that hesitation.
That's are you going to talk to me?
Yeah, that's my 5-cent psychotherapy for today. Hi, Hank.
Hi there.
It's a beautiful day, isn't it?
So far, yeah. The window's closed behind you, and we work in a completely enclosed room. But when I came to work, it was beautiful.
I can assure you it has continued to be beautiful. All right, so Hank, today what I'm thinking about is life's grand transitions, right? All of those things that we celebrate, because it's celebration season. So have you gotten any invitations to weddings, graduations?
Not this year.
Nothing yet?
No, not yet. I'm kind of past when all of my friends are getting married. So I went to 2 weddings this year, but nothing for the summer yet.
How about retirement parties?
I'm not that old.
He says quickly.
No. The only retiree I know is Paul Sievertson, our development director, but so far no parties.
Well, it's an interesting thing because in this season of celebrations, you know, we're surrounded by balloons and cakes. And I just went to a retirement party at work today. And it's, you know, kind of the happiness and well wishes and go out. And this is the, you know, best time in your life. And, you know, I keep having this sense that in all of our efforts to celebrate life's moments, in many ways, we inadvertently cause a lot of stress and anxiety for those who are going through the changes, right? The big celebrations. I mean, how many people told you that your wedding day, well, maybe, I don't know if it's the same for guys, but did people tell you your wedding days can be the happiest day of your life?
I think that's more true for brides, but yeah, I mean,
but it's a stressful day.
Oh, it's very stressful. Extremely stressful, yeah.
So I think it goes along with some of those lies that we tell people that are coming up behind us in life, right? Along with some of the little lies about, you know, the childhood traditions that turn out not being true, which I won't mention because I know a lot of children listen. But, you know, I think the idea that your graduation day and your wedding day and your retirement day are supposed to be the happiest days in your life really set us up for a lot of anguish.
Yeah, I mean, our wedding day, we were out of town and we were in Las Vegas and various people were flying in. So it was back and forth to the airport, picking up people, running to get the flowers. And then we got, it was not the greatest day of our lives, but it was, you know, it worked out okay.
And of course, a lot of people say that it worked out well.
Yeah, exactly.
I remember from my wedding day, and my husband and I just celebrated our 30th anniversary last week.
Congratulations. Week before.
Thank you. But it's funny because we still laugh about the fact that all the preparation went into, and the entire day, all we each had was a deviled egg and one bite of our carrot cake. And that was the extent of our meal. So I'm sure our blood sugar dip really helped with our mood and attitude, because I spent our wedding night, not to get TMI, but I cried a lot just because the whole day was over and all this anticipation, and I left and all my people were there, and it was just kind of this shocking experience to all of a sudden drive away and all the cans are behind us and it's supposed to be so much fun and here we're going off to start our life. And I just was bereft.
I'm sure my wife cried a lot on our wedding night too.
Yes. Yeah. It there's a huge dip that we experience that a lot of people experience normally, but no one really talks about it because it's counter to what we want to believe in our culture, which is that it's all about flowers and balloons and festivities and, you know, the great wedding night romance. But I think there is a lot of drop off. So that's the focus of today. And if you're just tuning in, this is a conversation with the Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and we do gather every week, every Tuesday, to share our stories, to share our struggles, our challenges, and also to share our joys, to share the ways that our lives are going really well. You can be part of the conversation by calling us. I'll open the phones in a bit today. 805-781-3875 is our number. You can also find out more about us on our Facebook page, The Reluctant Therapist, or our website. You can send me an email to elizabeth@thereluctanttherapist.com. And previous shows are always podcast available at kcbx.org. We have a new friendly website or under the News and Talk tab, three quarters of the way down. So you can find our shows there. But today, again, as I mentioned, it's celebration season. And because of, you know, my work teaching, I am around a lot of newly to be graduated students and feeling the height of their anxiety as they get to this point of going through the graduation. And it's supposed to be this time of pure joy and exhilaration and time spent studying. But to be honest, most of them are terrified. I have rarely spoken to a student at this point who just feels like they can't wait, going to put on the cap and gown and, you know, bust open the champagne and drift off into life, into the next event. They're terrified because this is all they've known since they were 5 years old, is their life as a student. And for the last 5 years, this is all they've known, is their life on campus and studying and kind of moving towards this goal. And yet, in all of the anticipation and the excitement about graduating is the fear of what comes next, of the letting go of that life that they once knew and were so familiar with. And so as much as they feel ready, as much as the senioritis has set in, and I know it's true for high school students and maybe even for eighth grade students, and now we, you know, have graduations for everything, maybe the preschool students have anxiety about what comes next. Because in every transition of life, there is a change, a loss, a letting go of that life we previously knew. And we don't really honor that. We don't honor that, the importance of reflecting on where we've once been, reflecting on what it meant to us, saying goodbye to and letting go of who we were at that time. Because the truth is, you know, we never go back. We don't live in a spiral. Unfortunately, we live on a path that goes vertically on, and we don't get to go back and revisit those times. And I think that is causes a lot of anxiety. Or we numb ourselves, right? Or if we don't like the way things are going in our life, we're taught quite often in our culture that we can just numb ourselves and carry on because we don't want to make everyone else around us feel uncomfortable if we're not exactly happy or ecstatic or thrilled with what's happening next. And it also doesn't mean that that's the whole experience. Because life is messy, right? Life is messy. And we experience all feelings and emotions at the same time. We rarely get to just say, today is a perfect day and feel nothing else. I often think of Disneyland, right? People call Disneyland the happiest place on earth. And I've never seen more kids cry in my life than spending a day in Disneyland because it's overwhelming. They're at this place. It's supposed to be happy and joyful. And they're, you know, running around ride to ride. But also someone steps on their Mickey Mouse ears or they don't get enough to eat or the line is too long or when it's time to leave, you know, they feel bereft and sad and just, you know, heartbroken. And so we can feel all those feelings at the same time of joy and happiness and sadness and bereavement, all within the course of a day. And so I wanted to talk today about weddings and graduations and the birth of new babies and even retirement. These are four really large life transitions. They're big life events filled with great anticipation, high expectations, and a lot of wishes for happily ever after. And that has a dark side of its own, the whole idea of wishing people happily ever after, of sending cards that say wishing you happiness, expecting happiness, happiness should be your goal. All of these transitions have a dark side too, because we have to adjust to our life post the experience, right? Who am I post-graduation? Where am I going? What is my identity? How am I to behave? For new brides and grooms, especially for brides, it's the who am I post-wedding, especially if you've been conditioned all of your life to anticipate this wedding day. One of my good girlfriend's daughter got married last weekend, and I was looking at, you know, some pictures that she sent, and everyone looked so beautiful. And of course, the therapist in me is looking at, you know, the backstory of what happens the next day or the next week when they come back. Because if you've spent your whole life or the last year and a half, as they did, planning this one day, have you in this period of time where you've been anticipating your wedding day, have you spent the same amount of time thinking about and anticipating and acknowledging what you are letting go of? What is changing? what is going to never be the same. We set ourselves up for a huge shock, especially new brides, when you spend all this time getting ready for the wedding day, but you haven't done the work thinking about what it is you're letting go, your old identity, the free time you had with your friends, being able to spend your money any way you'd like. You know, with all of the joy and anticipation of setting up your house, your nest, which is beautiful and fun and, you know, a spectacular time of our life starting out new in this new world, we do have to spend time acknowledging the losses and letting go of what we were before and who we were before, so that we can make space in our lives for that new world. And then for new moms, when new babies come into our life, we spend a lot of time. Again, we are a culture that loves to celebrate with showers and baby moons and I can't remember what it's called when they announce what this gender of the baby is, all the grand announcements. I mean, we'd love to celebrate. Our culture loves to celebrate, and corporations love us to celebrate because we spend a lot of money on these celebrations. But we don't do a lot of preparation for life post-baby, right? We don't do a lot of work with young moms talking about what will be different, how they will never be the same once that new baby comes. As a matter of fact, we're so not preparing young mothers that I believe that it's one of the reasons that we see a spike in postpartum depression. We once had the baby blues, which 80% of all women experience, you know, the tearfulness, the emotional changes, the hormonal fluxes, all very normal in this changing period of time post-baby. But I think one of the setups in our culture that's really detrimental is that for a lot of young women who are having children, we expect them to go back to work in 6 weeks and then behave at work as if nothing has ever happened, right? As if they just went on a vacation and now they're back. We don't have a lot of space for mothering in the workplace. And so for mothers that don't come around in 6 weeks, right, who don't feel fully planted in their new lives as a mother, don't feel fully settled with a baby. And if you've had a child, you know that in 6 weeks, you're still reeling from all of the changes in your body and all the changes in this baby and trying to figure out sleep and eat and rest and, you know, all of these pieces. But we've decided 6 weeks is some magical time that we go back to work, but it has nothing to do with biology, that being healed and ready to go back to work. It has nothing to do with a baby's schedule and whether or not they're ready to be left and to be settled. And so we look at these responses in women still feeling teary or anxious or sad or depressed or loss of appetite. We see these symptoms we commonly associate with depression. And at 6 weeks, do we decide, well, it must be chronic depression, instead of really looking at the context of what's happening, which is when you have a baby, your life changes forever. Forever. Even if you go back to work, you are never the person you were 6 weeks before. We like to think we're going to be, right? We're going to trim our body down and we're going to get back to work and we're going to look like, you know, we did before we got pregnant and we're going to just carry on with our life. But it's never the same. There's a surrendering that has to happen. And then finally, we look at retirement. And as I said, I just had a friend that retired and I've been to a few retirement parties. I don't know what that says about me or where I am in my life. Either my friends have done very well organizing their money or I'm getting older. But I've been to some retirement parties. And again, from the therapeutic perspective, it's hard for me to not wonder how the retirees are really feeling, because in the celebration of flowers and balloons and feasts and speeches and toasts, we expect that they're the happiest they've ever been because they're set free of the bonds of their work life and now can go do whatever they want. And yet for a lot of retirees, there's a huge amount of anxiety and depression and sadness and sense of loss and disorientation that comes along with this period of time that we don't acknowledge or talk about. We just decide that they are anxious or depressed and need medication or treatment or, you know, are mentally ill. And we throw around this term of mental illness quite frequently instead of looking at the context and normalizing. Absolutely, if you've worked at something for 30 plus years and you no longer are doing that, that's a traumatic shift to your psyche. That's a traumatic change in your life. And we can't be expected to wake up the next morning and fully embrace this new world. And so I want to talk about, and I want to hear from you about these big life transitions. How have they been for you? That wedding transformation into a new couple and how we adjust to that life post-marriage, post all the excitement. And for graduates, how did you adjust? How do you adjust to that change of letting go of who you were as a student and moving on to your adult life? A lot of students go right back to school. I think it's one of the great pushes to graduate school is that it delays the inevitable. But how has that been for you? And if you're a mom with a new baby and you've been through that transition, how was that transition for you? And retirees, what's it been like? I know I've heard from a couple of listeners who waited their whole lives to retire and move to the Central Coast and got here, and their spouses are miserable because they miss the routine and their lives prior to retirement. So how have you been through these transitions in your life? Join us now, 805-781-3875 is the number to be part of this conversation, 781-3875. How have you handled the big celebrations in your life? How were those transitions for you? How did you work through them? Or have you still struggled with those transitions? We can talk about that because I have a lot of ideas on how we can better go through life's celebrations, better to address or to approach life transitions that might really help us to appreciate and to move more successfully through these times. I think it will help if we prepare for life's transitions, if we set ourselves up and acknowledge that things are changing, we're never going to be the same. We're going to do a lot to minimize the post-change trauma that we experience once it's all happened and we look around and everyone expects us to be happy and joyful and we're not really feeling it, right? It's a lot of pressure when everyone tells you this is the best day of your life and you're not really feeling it. And I'm Elizabeth Barrett. If you're just tuning in, this is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. We meet every week to have conversations about life and those things that matter most to us. And today, the conversation is about celebrations, the celebratory season. And how is it that we prepare for the dark side of celebrations? And maybe it's supposed to be the happiest day in your life and the next day, it's the worst day of your life. How do we cope with that? And I also want to talk about how we can best offer our love and warmth and celebratory wishes to those who we are seeing go through these changes. You know, when you're getting the invitations to graduations, you're getting invitations to baby showers or to weddings, our first response, and if you look at all the cards that are available, our first idea is to send, you know, happiness. Be happy. That's the key to life. Be happy for the rest of your life. And I'm sorry, but I can think of nothing more overwhelming than telling someone over and over again that the whole purpose of their life is to be happy. I would love everyone to feel happiness throughout their lifetime. And I would wish for everyone the feelings of happiness more often than the feelings of sadness. There's no argument there. There is no argument. But I do argue that telling someone that they just need to worry about being happy sets them up to feel really anxious and really depressed because there's going to be plenty of times in their life when they're not happy at all. You know, new mothers go through a period of time where they wonder why they decided to have a child, and that's normal. There are feelings of isolation, alienation, and sadness. You look at your baby and they're a little stranger to you. And so if you're not feeling happy, have you now flunked motherhood? The same with our graduates. And we tell them, just be happy. It doesn't matter what you do, just be happy. Well, it does matter what you do because you have to have something to get up in the morning for. You have to have something that presses you forward. And it can't just be happiness because even the greatest experiences in life have a downside. And so if we're only living as happiness is our goal for satisfaction or success, then we're going to set ourselves up for a lot of disappointment. Same with retirees. If we just tell them to be happy, what happens when they're bored? What happens when things haven't gone the way they want it? What happens when they miss work and they want to go back and hang out with their friends? So what do you think about all this? Am I on the right track or am I missing something? 805-781-3875. Jennifer, you're on the air. What's on your mind?
Oh, yeah, I was just listening to your show and your topics, you know, as far as, you know, marriage and graduation, having a baby, retirement. And three of those are apply to me. And I think the comment I wanted to make was that people, I think in general, I know for myself anyways, they kind of glorify all these situations. And then when the, like you said, when the situation actually approaches, there's some downers that, you know, you have to deal with, realities. I don't want to call them downers, but just realities. And that's really what we're not prepared for.
So how did you deal with these?
Well, which one?
Which one had the biggest impact on you?
Right now, the baby. Mm-hmm. In marriage, I think, were the two biggest.
Mm-hmm.
Marriage, you know, not so much in my relationship with my husband, but dealing with the family relationships that come with that.
Mm.
In-laws and extended family that weren't mine before. And, you know, it just never even occurred to me that that would be part of the challenge of marriage. And, you know, dealing with that is... it's huge, and that's not everything. Nobody really talked to me about that. They talked to me about, you know, about how to make it, you know, a good relationship with my husband and things that I could do in that sense. But the extended family was never brought up.
And it is, and it's interesting, if we look at the research on premarital counseling, it's one of the biggest tasks and challenges to new marrieds is how to readjust those boundaries with extended family.
Right.
It really is. It's a huge piece of the transition and conversations that should really be had with the extended family. Hey, what are your expectations of how much time we're going to spend together or where we're going to celebrate holidays or how we're going to be, you know, take care of ourselves? It really is. It's a huge part of stress for marriages, and it isn't discussed. So did you find peace with it?
No, I'm working on that now. And I've been going to counseling, you know, before I was married and then continued on with my husband before we got married and into our marriage. But, you know, still couldn't be prepared for it enough. And I'm glad I'm in counseling because, you know, I'm getting help for that. But just the boundary setting is, it's an arduous task.
It's a huge task.
It's really hard because you don't want to hurt anybody's feelings, but somebody in the end always ends up with their toes stepped on.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And maintaining that boundary instead of just, you know, weakening because somebody's feeling like you're judgmental or you are picking on them is really tough.
And I think one of the things that I've found helpful and I encourage people to do is instead of setting up boundaries is to actually set up the events. So instead of saying to mother-in-law or cousins, you know, hey, we really want to spend this time alone, instead to approach it from, hey, we really want to spend these days with you or these events or these holidays, how does that work in your schedule? So that you actually are putting them, you know, you're bringing them into the story instead of pushing them out. And it's just a slight reframe on how we approach those boundaries, you know?
Yeah. That sounds good.
To offer up, here's the calendar dates that we really want to spend with you. We're so excited, and I hope they work for you. And then everything else, it feels like a positive.
Right.
And then how about the new...
That makes a lot of sense.
And how about the baby? How is that going?
Well, that also, and that adds a spin on boundaries, too, with in-laws as well. I think because sometimes they get, you know, overzealous. They really want to see the baby all the time. But reality is, you know, especially when they're little, mine's very little, 3 months. There's a lot of home growing, I like to say, that needs to happen before we can actually go out and start creating all these relationships with everybody else. We just got to make our adjustments at home first.
Beautifully said.
You know, and that's caused some tension, but I'm hoping that, you know, in a few months that will lessen because we'll be able to kind of go out and do more stuff.
And when you find your comfort as a family, then it's okay to invite everyone in. And I do encourage you, Jennifer, the same thing with this piece is to offer up when, you know, opportunities to visit so that you're not always having to say no or try to stay tight to give them something to look forward to. And that might really help diminish it a bit.
I like that idea of just having a schedule kind of like here's the times we'd love to have you.
Yeah, absolutely. And then let them figure it out.
Right. That's a great idea. Thank you for the help.
Thank you for calling in, Jennifer. Have a great day and congratulations.
Oh, thanks. You too. Bye-bye.
This is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. Our number is 805-781-3875. We're talking about those big celebrations, those big adjustments, and how do we navigate them? Charlie, you're on the air. What's on your mind?
Okay, I want to talk about the similarity between graduation and retirement.
Okay.
Retirement is when I retired. My last retirement was when I retired from the Air Force. It was more like a graduation. We had family and friends, and it was a big celebration. And I had already had a post retirement job nearby, I started teaching at Allen Hancock. I had I was a surgeon in the Air Force. I was too young to retire, totally retired, too old to start a practice. So I had planned to start. I think retirement/graduation was on a Friday. I went to work at Hancock teaching a basic science course, biology science course for health professionals. And it was one of the nurses I worked with said, you know, Charlie, you're going to be so busy in 2 to 3 months after you retire, you're going to be so busy, you wonder how you're able to work full time.
And it sounds like you had it all organized and ready to go. And I'm glad you brought it up, Charlie, because it is one of the transitional keys I was going to talk about, is having something that's on the horizon, that the celebration is a nice part of it, but it's just the event, right? It's just the party, but that's not a plan. And it sounds like you thought about something that you would be doing post the retirement party so that you wouldn't have that sense of loss or sadness.
Well, when I graduated from medical school, I had had internship and then I had military, you know, various graduations. I had plans ahead, but it just I just advise people to think of graduation and retirement as a graduation.
Exactly. Thank you. Well said, Charlie. A graduation from that part of life into the next one. And maybe we use that kind of as our stopping point, right, is that we look at graduation as this point in time where we need to reflect on where we've been and to look over that period of time and really love it and have the great memories. I think that's why yearbooks are so great. You know, to have a yearbook and to be able to look back over all of the highlights of that experience and have everyone sign it, it kind of gives an encapsulation of that period of time. I think it's why books celebrating big birthdays, you know, 60, 70, 80 years old, to have this book to kind of look back on that part of life, it makes that journey to the next part of life a little less daunting or overwhelming. Our number to be part of the conversation, as always, is 781-3875. This is a conversation with a reluctant therapist. Donna, you're on the air. What's on your mind?
Hi. I was just calling to tell you that I completely agree with you that sometimes celebrations can be sources of stress, actually, more so than we may anticipate, because a lot of times there's lots of people involved, and, you know, the main people doing the celebrating or that the celebration is about are not the only ones who end up having to make adjustments based on whatever change takes place. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's a marriage or something like that. It changes family dynamics. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of times emotions run high, whether they're positive, sometimes not so much. It has taught me just to recognize and savor the beauty of the quiet moments that I have that are not the celebratory times, maybe just the routine that I have, maybe those moments when I'm able to basically maintain my life and my family so that, as the prior caller was saying, when we're ready to reconvene with family and friends, we have had that time to be able to nurture ourselves, and then we're ready to nurture others as well. So it's kind of brought that balance to me where the celebrations are not what I think of as the happiest times necessarily, nor are the more mundane, you know, days in my life ones that I think of as boring. I can cherish those just as much.
When if I hear you, Donna, what you're saying is that the celebrations are a moment, but to find the celebration in the day-to-day kind of keeps it fresh, and that the celebrations in some way are almost a have to.
And sometimes we need to recognize that if we are not prepared for the fact that we may be setting ourselves up for a letdown, if we only anticipate that everything's going to be wonderful, we're not fully preparing for something. I've been through situations where I've anticipated a wonderful family celebration and found the complete opposite to be true. So you have to kind of prepare yourself sometimes that these things that we just tend to, in our minds, work up to being the greatest days of our lives, like you were bringing out earlier, they may be days that, okay, they're wonderful and they're worth celebrating. They also may come with moments that are not as perfect, But then other days in our lives may be really wonderful, just walking our dog or doing something that's routine for us, but we can stop and cherish those just as much as any celebration.
Well said, Donna. Thank you so much for calling in and sharing that. And it is a reminder that the celebrations that we get into, I wonder sometimes if we don't put too much on the celebration as being the purpose of life, right? That in some ways we almost build up our life as being from one big celebration to another. Maybe that's why we have to, you know, we celebrate the not just the birth of the baby, but all the things that happen in between. And instead of kind of enjoying the process of growing this new life inside of you, which is a 40-week process, we're really only thinking about all of the celebratory parts, right? Announcing the gender and having the baby shower, going on the baby moon and getting a push present. And it's like all the celebratory things, which are fun to look forward to. But in between the celebrations are the processes of life that prepare us for and get us ready for what's coming next. And this is A Conversation with the Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. The number to be part of our conversation is 781-3875. We'll be back to take your calls and continue this conversation.
In tune with Public Radio KCBX. It's A Conversation with the Reluctant Therapist. Stay with us next at 3 o'clock for fresh air. The number to call today to be a part of the conversation is 805-781-3875. It's Public Radio KCBX.
So I started off the show this afternoon talking about celebration season and the amount of anxiety I feel on campus with the students who are getting ready to graduate and the fear that they feel moving into this next phase of their lives and how uncertain they are about what's coming up next. And also the wedding invitations that are coming up and friends, children who are getting married and seeing all the work that goes into planning the day, the celebration to mark this occasion and all the anticipation for that actual event. And then when it comes to new babies and the birth of that new baby and all the anticipation that comes with that. And when I'm looking at all of these celebrations, but I'm seeing the actual emotional response, I think that it's important for us to step back a little bit and understand why is it that we are celebrating? And what is it that we're celebrating? What is the purpose of the celebratory piece? Because when we only focus on the celebration, we're not doing the work psychologically, the mental health work we need to do to prepare ourselves for the transition that's happening. You know, there's a reason why ceremonies are set up the way they are. There's a reason why wedding ceremonies are the way they are, because there is this process of helping the psyche of the married couple move from being independent individuals to joining their lives for life. And our psyche needs to move through this transition to be prepared for seeing ourselves in this new role, that we're changing roles, that we are no longer, you know, at the process of the ceremony. At the beginning, we come in as an independent individual and we leave connected to another person for life. We need to have this ceremony to help our psyche be ready to be different, because we never go back to being the same. Even if we end up being single again through divorce, we're never the same person we were the moment we walked down the aisle and took those vows. And I don't know if we spend enough time really understanding the magnitude of that change. And so when young couples come back from their honeymoon period, they tend to have a huge drop-off, a post-wedding depression or sadness or anxiety. And then we don't talk about it or warn anyone about this. And so we have a lot of people who feel like they're mentally ill because they're not joyous and happy and over the moon being newly married. That they're feeling kind of sad and depressed. And when we don't talk about those feelings, when we don't share those feelings, we can tend to feel isolated or alone or broken or sick, when it's really normal. That is a normal response to a huge change. The same goes with graduations, that we do all of this work to get the graduation done. But the reason we have a graduation ceremony and the way the ceremony is set up is to help you transition from being a student to a graduate. It's why we put on the cap and gown. It's why we move the tassel from one side to the other. Those are all very important pieces of helping the psyche adjust and change from student to graduate. And if we don't do the work in preparation of letting go and saying goodbye to our old life, we find ourselves feeling anxious or depressed or lost or alienated, right? Disoriented. A lot of people describe feeling disoriented. I feel disoriented in my life. Well, it is disorienting to change directions, to be traveling down one path of our life and then move another direction. It would cause us to feel dizzy and disoriented and overwhelmed. But if we don't warn people, if we don't tell them that that's a normal part of the process, they will tend to feel like they are broken or sick or mentally ill, and afraid to talk about it out loud because they're afraid no one will understand. If I'm supposed to be the happiest I've ever been in my life and I'm so sad, then what's broken about me? So I think it's important to normalize these things and understand that there is a process of change we have to go through. Every change, even wonderful change, has moments of trauma in them because we are leaving a life we used to know and moving on to a new one. And it takes time to adjust. And it's more than 6 weeks. I'm sorry, but change takes longer than 6 weeks when you're changing your entire life. And I think that's important to address. So I'd like to hear from you. What are your thoughts on this? How have you approached your celebrations? What kind of things have you done to prepare for great changes in your life? Or maybe you are going to celebrate a graduation in the next week or so. What's the best way to honor young graduates without adding to their stress? Because that's my concern also, is that we love our people so much, right? We want them to know that we're there for them. We care for them. We want the best for them. But quite often in our zeal to wish them happiness, we cause them stress. So what do you think about this? 805-781-3875 is the number to be part of the conversation. How are you dealing with big transitions in your life? So when it comes to happiness, and I talked about it before, and as I said, you know, I'm not a gloomy guess. You know, I'm not saying that happiness doesn't exist. It definitely does exist. But I think instead of, you know, telling someone that their goal is happiness and wishing them happiness, and I only want happiness for you, wish them something tangible, right? Write a personal card and say, I wish for you the resilience to find the good in challenging times. I wish for you the curiosity to go on adventures. I wish for you the courage to take chances in your lives and not be afraid of failure. Those are the cards I wish someone would write. Maybe I need to start my own greeting card line, because I think those are the things that we need to share, right? Those are the wishes that we want to give people, the inner fortitude to move on when they feel down. And young married couples, don't just say congratulations and go off in the sunset with the cans. Tell them, you know, I wish for you the tenacity to fight through the dark times as a couple. I wish for you the ability to reach out for help when you're struggling and not just try to fix it on your own. Those are important wishes for young married couples. So what do you think? Do you agree? Or do you have another opinion? 805-781-3875. Candy, you're on the air. What's on your mind?
Oh, I just wanted to say, as I was listening to you, that I think it's really important to validate our own individual responses to these set events. For example, my son is a special needs child, and he's graduating from high school. And I decided I'm not doing the whole big celebration. I'm just going to do an individual party for him later this summer, and it relieved so much stress when I went that way and just let go of those expectations. And I think a lot of times we don't allow people to validate their real true feelings around these events, and it makes people feel isolated and alone. So
I think I think that's important, because not everyone is going to have the same reaction. Some people will graduate and it's just a party from that moment on, right? And some people do struggle. So to be able to acknowledge that there is a huge spectrum of responses.
And they're all valid, and they're all beautiful and okay. And lately for graduates, I've been giving them a list of my favorite quotes that have helped me through my life, or a list of books that have been instrumental that I wish I'd found like 15 years ago, and I've gotten some good responses from graduates that they have found some of those helpful.
I think it's a wonderful gift. And for your son also, having the party later in the summer, in some ways it actually allows the graduation and the magnitude of the change to simmer for a few weeks and then mm-hmm. to have the party.
Yeah, because for where he is, the total going through the whole big crowded thing would be very overwhelming. And what's the point? It's not celebrating what he needs.
Yeah, absolutely. Well said, Candy. Thank you for calling in to share.
You're welcome.
Celebrations. Yeah. You know, I think about, you know, the times in my life I was supposed to be happiness and how it was really sometimes a little dark. You know, after my first daughter was born, I was living here on the Central Coast and, you know, pretty far away from my family and on my own and absolutely unprepared for what had actually happened in my life. You know, this magnitude of bringing another human being into the world. And I struggled a long time with the baby blues and then moving into probably a longer period of postpartum feelings adjustment of depression, you know, that longer sense of finding myself, who am I and why do I have this important job and how will I do this job? And really, you know, I went to mothers groups and I went to places to kind of get some help and they all seemed to be doing so well that I was afraid to say that I wasn't really loving this and that it was difficult. And it really took some hands-on help of my parents coming down and giving us a break that really changed, that really turned the corner. And so I was thinking a lot about how do we best celebrate the new birth? How do we best celebrate and support new mothers? You know, one of the things I think is real important is a mothering ceremony. We do a lot of, you know, parties, the baby shower, which is fun and full of presents. But how about a ceremony where all mothers come together and support this new mother and give her love and comfort and not advice and definitely not scary stories. Please stop telling pregnant women all of your horrible birth stories because it's not helpful. It really isn't. But to offer comfort and support and offer to be there. And then when the baby comes, if we really wanted to support women through this adjustment and transition, one, to normalize all the feelings, all of the individual ways that we adjust to change, and then to not pathologize, right? Not pathologize new motherhood or the feelings of sadness, but to normalize them. Because if we look at anxiety and depression, the two biggies, right? The things that really bog us down in our lives, the two of them really get trapped in our psyche, in our system, in our mental health and well-being when we fight them. When we clamp down and we say, I shouldn't feel this way. I don't know why I feel this way. I can't believe I'm so anxious. Can't believe I'm so unhappy. When we fight the changes, we set ourselves up to feel more depressed and more anxious. And so for new mothers to be able to have this space where they can go with the flow, right, to let all these emotions come and go and to feel them, the happiness and the sadness, and not to be fearful if they're having dark thoughts or fearful thoughts. But as other mothers or supportive people to offer time, come sit for an hour so mom can take a nap, bring over a meal. And it needs to happen for 40 days, not just the week that the baby's born, but for 40 days, there should be that support. And that's the way we can help with this long transition and to allow mom the time to cry or laugh or feel what she's feeling. And instead of judging or being afraid of those feelings, to say, hey, I feel you. I get that. I can see this is really hard. You know, those are good basic therapeutic responses. So what do you think about this? I'm Elizabeth Barrett. This is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. The number to be part of this conversation is 805-781-3875. And, you know, it's interesting because I'm kind of at four different places with the conversation. One is around new babies. One is around weddings. One is around retirement and this high thing that we put on graduate, not just graduation, but on retirement, right? That we're supposed to leave this job that we've been on all of our life and then feel like the next day we're just free to be whoever we are. But there's a transition that needs to happen. We need to mourn a bit the life we once led. And then when it comes to graduation, and I have an intern working with me this summer who, not as a recent graduate, but graduated in the last year or so, Ashlyn Hatch, and she's going to school in Reed up in Oregon. And Ashlyn, how was that transition for you from graduation to go be happy now?
It was crazy. I mean, you have this whole big lead up at AG. You have pretty much a whole week of doing various celebrations at school. You're classes are kind of over, but you're spending time talking to your teachers about how exciting it's going to be when you go to college. And then, you know, you graduate and you're still home for the summer and you're thinking, what do I do next? And everyone's telling you, oh, it's so great. You're going to be so happy at school now. And college has definitely been great. There are a lot of really happy times, but it's certainly not idyllic. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it was interesting for me reconciling that. And then for a while I thought like, oh, well, is it only me? Am I the only one who is feeling like, oh, gosh, I have so much homework. I'm not like doing the college happiness thing. But, yeah, talking to a lot of my friends, I think it's been very similar for a lot of them where you definitely have excellent, fantastic moments that you're really excited to call home and tell your mom about. But not all happiness all the time. I think a lot of contentedness is the best reports that I hear are about people being really content in their situation more than like crazy happy all the time.
And I worry sometimes for your generation too because of this idea that everything has to be a party or a celebration or a high 24/7. And if you're feeling anything less than that, you somehow are a failure. And I know that Facebook, you know, the research on Facebook has shown that less than 4 hours a week on Facebook raises the incidence of depression in young people. And, you know, seeing or feeling that everyone else is happy and doing well creates a lot of stress. And I wonder if you experience that, too, with the expectations that you should be on high all the time.
Yeah, absolutely. So toward the beginning of my college experience, certainly I was feeling that because, you know, like I was saying, I was having the thoughts, oh my gosh, am I the only one who is not happy here? Everyone's so excited. And then I would get to call my friends mm-hmm. and hear about how we were having the same experiences. But if I just looked at their Facebook timeline, it looked like they were having the best time ever while I'm sitting here buried in homework.
It is, and it can be really frightening. And I think that that's the key to is what you said is being able to talk to friends, to reach out, to have the conversation. I think the hardest thing is maybe to say to someone, this isn't the best day of my life. You know, I'm really frightened about graduating, or I'm really frightened about what my life is going to be once I'm married. And, you know, all of a sudden we're just kind of living together day to day. That's a huge wake up call for young couples. Like, what do we do now if the wedding celebration is over? You know, what's the next thing we celebrate? How do we move forward? I'm Elizabeth Barrett. This is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. Welcome to my new intern, Ashlyn Hatch. And Rick, you're on the air. What's on your mind?
Well, you were talking about the transitions that I guess primarily women have to go through when they have a child. Mm-hmm. I've had four children in my life, and I've been in situations where women and young mothers were free to spend all their time with their babies. Mm-hmm. And even in situations where the men were as well. And what I found is that when people are really free like that, the kids feel a lot more secure and they get a lot more adventurous and stuff. And especially if you're spending a lot of time outdoors. Mm-hmm. And when you're in a typical city situation, especially if the mom has to go to work and the child is in childcare, then that's, I think, a lot more difficult. When I was a child, most women stayed home with their kids, at least middle-class women. And I grew up in a situation where in the morning, the moms would go out in this big green lawn the three apartment buildings in this complex would face, and they would spend the mornings talking and watching their kids play and stuff. That was, you know, a pretty idyllic childhood. And I think psychologically people have found that by being able to give kids that kind of undivided attention and at the same time allowing kids to play with each other pretty freely, kids develop in a really different way than they do today, where they're kind of isolated from each other and there's not that natural connection.
Well, and, you know, it's funny because you're bringing up a few different points about almost attachment parenting and how do we build those bonds with our children? Do we give new mothers and new fathers enough time to actually build those strong attachments with our children? And then when they're in childcare, is the childcare, because that is more of the norm now that a lot of, you know, people are working and have to work to support their family, is the childcare providing children with enough stimulation and enough connection to nature and to others? Because we are a a culture of connection. We are a tribal people. And so the third thing it seemed to bring up was this isolation children feel because of the screen piece, which is a subject that comes up and over on and on. But I think it is, you know, when I talk about transitions, which has kind of been the key today, I think one of the transitions Rick's talking about is that transition to this different way of raising children and of dealing with our life choices. And how do we adjust to having a child and then having to go back to work? And how will we continue to nurture ourselves and our mental health and well-being for men and for women while we're raising our children so that we can model for our children a whole way of being on the planet? And I think it's it's a challenge. Did I capture your 3 points, Rick?
I think one other thing that they found in recent years in doing studies of children and their interaction with their parents, they found that a child gets its entire sense of identity during the first 6 months of its life by looking into its mother's face. Mm-hmm. In other words, there's this really important connection between a baby and its mom that I think we're not allowing to take place. And I think these things are having serious repercussions as we go forward.
Absolutely. I think they're going to be something that we continue to have to address. And I think, you know, some of the positives of the brain research has been noticing that that neural connection is important. The interesting thing is with all the brain research, what we keep finding out is that the things that we do therapeutically or the things that we know in our gut are in the best interest of women and children and humans in general. The things we know in our gut to be right are the things we should be doing. It's just nice to have the science to back it up. But I appreciate you calling in and sharing those thoughts about child rearing and those connections and those attachments. You know, today we've been talking about like the transitional piece of celebrations, that celebrations are important. We want to have that day to come together, to gather, to have a feast, to have song, to have dance, you know, to hug and to kiss and to acknowledge the moment. But I think what I'm asking also is that we look at the before and after of the celebration, that we do the work preparing for the celebration so that our psyche is ready for what's going to come next. You know, premarital counseling is essential, doing a lot of the pre-baby work, learning the skills that you're going to need, getting together a support network. And when it comes to graduation, you know, doing that work, kind of thinking about taking a deep breath, acknowledging where you've been, looking at your yearbooks, talking to friends, you know, doing that piece of getting ready to let go. And when it comes to retirement, you know, to look back over your career, to acknowledge that you're changing, to grieve those pieces. We don't allow ourselves to grieve life changes, but it's important, you know, to take a moment to cry, to feel it, to let the emotions come through, because anxiety and depression are all about those blockages, blocking those feelings of grief and sadness and loss and change. And it gets stored in our body and react in this way. We have physical symptoms. And so the post-celebration piece is also important in supporting our mental health and well-being, to normalize the mixed bag of emotions of sadness and happiness and, you know, overwhelm that we experience when we go through these changes. And to know that the blues or depression or sadness, you know, these things can oftentimes be normal experiences and responses to dramatically different life circumstances, even if they're great circumstances. Getting married and sharing your life with someone is a beautiful experience, but it takes adjustment. It can take a year. Having a child is life-altering and beautiful, indescribable ways, but it takes time to transition. It takes time to find your feet underneath you again. The same with retirement, the same with graduation, and to give ourselves grace. And I so encourage my fellow helping professionals, you know, to use caution before jumping in with both feet into this medical model, symptom-focused mode of treatment and diagnosis, because it's so important to really understand the entire picture of a client's life when they come in to get help, to really not just look at the symptoms, but to look at everything that's happening and how they've adjusted or how they've prepared or what support they're getting, right? What's their diet and exercise and rest mode? Who comes over and keeps them some company or who do they reach out to? We have to do that work to help understand the full experience of our clients before we just label them with some sort of really debilitating diagnosis. It's important to normalize instead of pathologizing. You know, I'd love to make that our bumper sticker for psychotherapy. Normalize more, pathologize less. You know, to understand that the world is maybe 80%, the culture is 80% of what causes us this sense of dis-ease. You know, I believe that it's a crazy culture that expects a woman to return to work 6 weeks after giving birth and expects her to behave as if nothing's ever happened and changed in her life. That's a crazy cultural belief. The woman is not crazy for feeling sad or depressed or anxious or disoriented 6 weeks after giving birth. She's not crazy. The expectation that she's going to be able to leave that child and go to work is crazy. And it's not an accident that at 6 weeks of any kind, we start to want to medicate people looking at their symptoms because 6 weeks is our postpartum maternity leave. You know, we need to start thinking about the cultural norms that are crazy and not focus so much on our behaviors and responses to the crazy culture. So today we've been talking about transitions and celebrations, and I encourage you to rethink those graduation cards or those wedding gift messages that you're going to send or the new baby shower gifts. Rethink them. Think about what really is important, right? What do you really want to wish for them more than happiness? You want to wish them an opportunity to come to you for guidance if you need to. Wish them resilience. Wish them courage. Wish them strength. Wish them the ability to recognize that even on the darkest of days, if you keep breathing and you keep trusting and you keep moving forward, that light days will come. Because that's the truth about life, right? It's not just about happiness 24/7. It's about understanding that no matter how dark our period of our life can be, with enough support and understanding and opportunity to feel our feelings, we can find our way to the other side. And this has been a conversation with The Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. You can find previous shows on our webpage, thereluctanttherapist.com, or at kcbx.org. You can podcast all of our shows. You can always send me an email to elizabeth@thereluctanttherapist.com or my Facebook page, The Reluctant Therapist. Always love to hear from you. Appreciate you being a part of this community, this part of Public Radio and KCBX. And we're going to go out today with a good old-fashioned 1970s pre-feminist movement song from the Fifth Dimension, the Wedding Bell Blues, to kind of lift the spirits a little and wish you the best for a wonderful week. I'll be back next week with a fascinating guest who's going to talk about the importance of leaning into our lives when we're over the age of 85.